Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 10th of Elul. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to discuss the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, an important 19th century Rav in Germany who has a lot of battles with reform. And he's going to be discussing the issue of Metzitza Bapeh during circumcision. Metzitza Bapeh is a topic that's also relatively contemporary because in our times as well, there have been those who have claim that we should no longer do Metzitza Bapeh. I remember back when I was in rabbinical school, so that's going back a ways already, a professional person who does circumcisions a lot, coming to talk about it and saying that he did Metzitza, which is, Metzitza is after the cutting off of the foreskin and the membrane underneath the foreskin, after that slice is done. So before binding up the wound, the tradition was that the moel was supposed to suck out the blood. We'll see some of that discussion in the Binyan Sion. This is Siman Chaf Gimel, chapter 23 in the Binyan Sion, from the 10th of Elul of Tafresh Vav of 1846. So the Metzitza Bapeh was you were supposed to suck out the blood. The assumption was, and I'll skip when we get to it, but the assumption was that there's blood inside the wound that was sort of bunched up together and would only be pulled out. And it wasn't right at the wound. It wasn't like you could take a bandage and just sort of sop it up or wipe it away. It needed to be pulled out of the wound. So that was what the Metzitza was. Metzitza was trying to create a suction and pull it out from a far place. So that was traditionally done by Peh. The Binyan Sion, we'll talk about that a little bit, so I'm not going to go into it. But there were already complaints about it then. In our times as well, there have been complaints because there have been reported cases where a Moel has some kind of infection in his mouth, some kind of disease in his mouth, and can, God forbid, pass along to the child, and the child can get seriously ill or even, in terrible cases, pass away from the illness that he gets on the fresh one. So those are issues that are alive in our time still and were already being brought up in the time of the Binyan Sion. Oh, so I was saying, when I was in medical school, the Moel said he did Metzitza Bapeh, but he used a test tube, right? So you would a syringe tube. It was open on each side. You put one end of it on the place of the mila where the circumcision had been performed, and the other part was where his mouth would go, and he would suck from that. And that way, nothing from his mouth would touch or get onto the baby. There are those who held that that's not doesn't qualify as Metzitza Bapeh because it has to be dafka bapeh. The mouth has to be on it, and that's where you get into trouble today. Binyan Sion doesn't talk about those issues. He's only talking about the idea of Metzitza Bapeh, that we need a Metzitza. So those are the questions that come up at the topic at hand. So the way his questioner phrased the issue was, what's this whole Metzitza thing that Chachamim in the Mishnah said you have to do? She'tiknu Chachamim ba-Mishnah, that the Chazal in the Mishnah required. That will become important because one thing Binyan Sion will say is that he's going to say it's not a rabbinic ordinance of the time of the Mishnah, it's a tradition they already had. We'll get to that. And then the question was, does it have to be of a peh and with the mouth, or can it be by hand? So that by hand question would be different than, let's say somebody today came in and said, I don't want to do Metzitza Bapeh, but I'll put some kind of a sterile tube on the makom amila and have a way to sort of vacuum up some blood. If there were such a thing, that would be a very different question. But that's not the question he was being asked. So his response is, the Rambam in Hilchos Mila, in the second chapter of the Laws of Circumcision, wrote, when he's giving the order of how the circumcision is done, is after the foreskin has been cut off, motzeitzet amila, you suck at the place of circumcision until the blood that's in the mekomot harichokim, in farther places, meaning it's not surface blood that we're worried about, that the metzitza is aimed at helping or solving or removing. It's stuff that's further inside the body, and the problem was that it was assumed to be a danger if that blood was left inside, because it would clot up, I think, and would cause problems. From that Rambam, the Binyan Sion says, it seems to say that it's got to be bapeh dafka, because if you're trying to get things from far away, pressing by hand, right? So let's say somebody wanted to say, I'm not going to do Metzitza, I'm going to squeeze the makom amila. So the point is, squeezing the makom amila, let's say if somebody had a wound somewhere else in their body, and there's an open wound, and they wanted to get the blood out right there, they could squeeze that, and that would remove all the things. Or, you know, other times, let's say if there's a pus in a wound and you want to squeeze it out for some reason, so squeezing can work. But if we're trying to suction something from far away, then you need suction, and that's not going to be done by squeezing. That is what Binyan Sion says the Rambam seems to show. Then he quotes a tshuva of the Dvar Shmuel, where he first thinks that Dvar Shmuel was a man named Shmuel Avohav from the 17th century, from 1610 to 1694. He was a Rav in Venice. He was one of the great rabbis of Italy in the 17th century. And he has tshuvot called Shut Dvar Shmuel. And when he describes it, I'm going to skip Binyan Tzion. He wasn't sure exactly what he meant, but in his time, there was the way they did it was he would do matitza, and that it was bapeh. And then afterwards, they would put wine on the wound and then bandage it because they thought the wine would constrict the wound and help it stop bleeding. And some people would do it with their mouths. They would put the wine in their mouths. They put the and then sort of, I don't want to say spit, but in some way get the wine out of their mouths onto the wound, and that's the way they would do it, so the blood wouldn't come out too much. So meaning you've done suction to pull out the blood, but you don't want to keep that doing. So to seal up the wound, you want some kind of a constricting agent. And they thought that wine would do that, or other kinds of drugs they had that would stop the bleeding. And that part, the Rav Shmuel Avohav says, in Dvar Shmuel, that part could be done by hand or without the mouth. And on tiny Sunday, on fast days, they specifically didn't do it by mouth because they were worried that they might swallow some of it and they wouldn't be fasting and stuff like that. In any case, that Dvar Shmuel shows that, first of all, you don't want the, it's not that you want bleeding to go on forever. You want to constrict it afterwards. You want to just pull out some of the blood that's in there and make sure that it doesn't clot up. And then you want to stop the bleeding. But it also shows that the blood that you're worried about is mikomot rechokim, is blood that's farther away in the body. It's not surface blood. Therefore, Binyan Tzion says, "Zeh vada yefshar biyad." You can't do it by hand. So if your two choices are creating some kind of suction, and by mouth was the easiest in way to create that kind of suction, or squeezing it out, the squeezing is not going to do it. Squeezing produces, gets rid of all the surface or nearby blood. It can squeeze it out from the wound, but if you want to get stuff from far away, that you're going to have to actually do some kind of a suction device, like pulling out by suctioning it up with one's mouth. I don't even know what it's called, breathing in, sucking in the air, and that will create, yeah, something like that. Okay. But what he says he doesn't know is, how did the Rambam and other poskim and other halachic decisors know that this mitzitza is meant to do that? Meaning, if you look in the Mishnah, when it talks about mitzitza, it doesn't give a reason for it. It's the Rambam who's giving that reason, and then others who are picking up on that Rambam and accepting it. So that it is clear from the Rambam and this Dvar Shmuel, for example, that the mitzitza is aimed at getting out blood from faraway places, but how do they know that that's true? And that, therefore, you need suction for it. So he says, and don't think, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that talks about whether the blood is together in one place or it's a bruise or and how it works. He says, but that doesn't prove anything. So that's not the issue. Then he goes, this is, I think, really a tour de force. And what he's about to do, I think he did without a real concordance, because as far as I know, the Mandelkern concordance that we all use is, a Mandelkern, I just looked it up, is one in 1846. I don't think there were, I mean, there might have been some other version of a concordance, but he, I think, might just have known what we're about to see by heart, which is always an interesting thing to watch, what people knew and just had going there. Because what he says is, he thinks that the Rambam got it because the Mishnah uses the language of mitzitza, and that root of mitzitza, he says, well, there are three different ways that you can use that the root has of mitzitza. He thinks that root of matz means hotza'ad davar mi davar, taking one thing out of another. And that's why maybe mitz would be Jews, because it's the stuff that comes out of a fruit. But he says he thinks there are three versions of it in the Mishnah, in the Torah and the Mishnah, in Tanakh and the Mishnah. There's motz mem vav tzadi, and that's like mitz chalav. Then there's matzah, which is v'nimtza damo, you get the blood out of a korban, as it says at the beginning of Vayikra. And then there's matzat l'man tamotu. So he's claiming that all three of these words are slightly different. And the grammarians, the people who really care about language, they think they're all the same. But if you look very carefully, he says, you see that they're actually different from each other. So he is now, just casually, in the course of a tshuva about mitzitza, developing a whole theory of the root of these three words that are very similar to each other, because they all have the mem and the tzadi. So he says, motz, he thinks, means pressing and squeezing something to get it out. Matzat means pulling it out by suction, like we're talking about here, and he gives a pasuk leman tamotzu, right? It comes after leman tinku, and then the shorish of matzah or mitzah, he thinks is Both of them. It can be pressing or it can be suction, like Mitzademo. Then he says, so first that he knows enough of Tanakh and he has it well enough forwarded in his mind that he figured this out and that he has this idea of it. That's one interesting thing. And as I'm saying that, I guess it's interesting to me that one of his students, of Samson Raphael Hirsch, if you look in his Torah commentary, also, I just thought of it now, but also focus a lot on roots and understanding the roots of Hebrew and finding connections that we wouldn't have thought of and saying that they're, and having a whole theory of the Hebrew language. And now I see that the Binyan Sion did it as well before him. So he says the Shorish of Matzatz, which is the one that we have for Mitzitza, he said it's only one time in Psukim and four times in the Mishnah. So to be able to say confidently that it only appears four times in the Mishnah, remember, it means you know the Mishnah well enough to be able to say it only appears four times in the Mishnah. Then he gives the examples. It's here, and it's in Parah, and it's this, and this, and this. He gives the examples. And he says, I don't know any more in the Mishnah. And in the Gemara, we found it in a couple of places. And then he says, and by the way, when you see the word mayit in Aramaic, that's not the same word. Right? So, for example, in the Gemara in Gittin, that might be well known, the Gemara talks about Rabbi Tzadok, who fasted for 40 years, trying to prevent the Beit HaMikdash from being destroyed, and then once it was destroyed, they were trying to heal him. This is one of the three requests that the Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made of Vespasian when he met with him in that story. If you don't remember the story, look it up in Gittin, Nunhei, Nunvav. But they want to heal him now. He's got to sort of get back to eating. So they started off by giving him dried figs, and I think it's dried figs, dried dates, gross, dried figs, and he would suck at them. So it says Mayitz. So he says, Lashon Matzatz, Mishicha Bapeh. Also, she thinks that is the same. Uvachol Makamot Shibtah Shorash Matzatz. It always means pulling something out by a suctioning power, by the force of pull, of suction. And therefore, when our Mishnah says, Mila Umotzitzin, that he thinks was the clue that the Rambam, that was what taught the Rambam, they were looking for something that would pull it from far away. So not only has he made this inference about the meaning of these various roots that are very similar to each other, he's also assumed that the Rambam understood all of that, and that was the source for the Rambam, of the idea that Mitzitza has to be something that pulls it far away. Interesting claim. I could have imagined the Rambam just knowing it because that was what Mitzitza was, and you just see it growing up, and you hear from everybody, you know what Mitzitza is, and that's what it is. That's the way Rav Yaakov Ettlinger in Binyan Sion says it. Then, once you know that that's the point of Mitzitza, then it becomes clear as to why it is that it has to be with the mouth and not by the hand. Because what hands squeezing and things like that and pressure can do is they can squeeze things out that are already right near the surface. But to get things from far away, you're going to need more than that. And that was where he thinks the source is. You need Peh Badavka. So now, he says, okay, once that's true, then we have to figure out if we have to worry about what people now say, Chadashim Mikarov Ba'u. People have these new ideas, right? That phrase, Chadashim Mikarov Ba'u, from Tanakh, it references the idea that people always think they've come up with new ideas that are so new and so clearly superior to what came before, that we have to pay attention to them and throw over everything else that we've had before. So that idea of Chadashim Mikarov Ba'u is already an indication. What he means is that we don't necessarily place full stock in these Chadashim Mikarov Ba'u. The end of that pasuk in Hazino is Lo Se'arum Avotechem, that your forefathers didn't know about them, didn't pay attention to them, and it's in the context of Avodah Zarah. So when he says here, Chadashim Mikarov Ba'u, it's again, it would be the idea that just like if somebody decided that they found an Avodah Zarah that they wanted to worship, we would say to them, that's a new thing that's not our tradition, that's not who we are, that's not what we do. So that's what he's saying here. So what's going on here? Doctors have come along, and following these doctors, there are Rabbanim, there are rabbis all that way as well. So this element of it is a very contemporary aspect, and it comes up as a big question. When doctors say something, how do rabbis react? So very often, some rabbis are very ready, and maybe sometimes they should be, to adopt what the doctors say. So we're going to see how it works out here in terms of Mitzitza, and then we'll maybe have a chance to think a little bit about how that would work in other situations as well. So Rav Yaakov Ettlinger says, the doctors have said, along with some Rabbanim, that therefore that you should not have Mitzitza. Why? Because the Chazal, he says, didn't understand the way these things work. Because first of all, not only is there no danger in not doing Mitzitza, meaning their first claim is, we are positive that if you don't do mitzitza, there won't be a problem. There's no such thing as blood that clots up and creates a problem for the kid. It doesn't happen that way. That's what the doctors are claiming. And then they said, and not only that, it can lead to problems. Because if in the mouth of the motzeitz, of the moel, of the person doing the mitzitza, of the person putting their mouth on and suctioning, there's something in the mouth that's infectious, basically, and the wound is an open wound, it's easy to transfer the infection from the mouth of the moel to the baby and to cause problems, as sadly we have in fact seen in our times. So therefore, it's worse, right? Not only aren't you saving the baby, you're helping the baby, you might be causing the baby some danger. So then he says, well, but that wasn't good enough for them, because the way to avoid that is, that what he says is, she'yivdiku an ha-moel terem yiten lo rishayon. Before you certify the moel or allow him to do the mila, you check him. So I'm not sure if Yaakov that means. I think it's not clear to me if he means you check him each time, or that in general you check the mouth of the moel, you do a check, you see if there's anything wrong, and then you do it. If that was what he meant, then that one wouldn't answer the question, because it's not that a moel, it could be that you could say some moelim just have this in their mouth always. But there's also moelim who get sick. So if you want to say, let's say a moel has, you know, we're worried about chronic diseases, let's say HIV was one that came up, and how a moel would get HIV is a whole different question. But let's say he got a bad infusion blood sometime. In any case, that's something you could check one time, and if he doesn't have it, you could say, okay, we can believe that he doesn't have it, and we can expect he won't get it in the future. But what if a moel is ill in some other way that comes along the way? So Rav Yaakov Avinger seems to think that we could check him and that would get rid of that problem. And that the other people agreed that would get rid of the problem. So therefore, because they didn't like mitzitza, and they wanted to stop it, they came up with another claim. They said that part of the problem is that they thought that the earlier people, the people at the time of the Mishnah who had come up with mitzitza, they thought these people are trying to claim against that the mitzitza would close up the wound. They thought what you were trying to do with the suction was helping the wound sort of close in on itself, and therefore it would help the wound stop bleeding, and that's not what mitzitza does. Meaning they claim they misunderstood what mitzitza is, and that's why they wanted it. Now that we understand better, we should do it differently, right? That's the claim, and that's a common claim that comes up with people as they get new information or new knowledge. They'll very often look back on something in the past, think about it, say, oh, it looks like they thought this. Clearly they were wrong, and therefore we should stop doing it. But and they went one step further, even some of them. They said, and the truth is, now that you know that mitzitza doesn't do what it's supposed to do, that if you do it on Shabbos, it's an iser skila, because you're violating the Torah. They have a Gemara that says, that makes it clear that mitzitza seems to be a Torah prohibition. It seems to be a Torah prohibition, because Rav Papa says that you know that mitzitza saves lives, and mitzitza is to deal with a danger, because if a moel doesn't do because we allow violating Shabbos. So they were assuming violating Shabbos meant that it's a Torah prohibition. We're violating Torah prohibition, but then once we learn that it's not a sakana anymore, it's not a danger anymore, that would be a chilul Shabbos. So that's the claim of these other people. So far, the people who want to get rid of mitzitza have made three claims. Claim number one was it could be dangerous itself because the moel might have germs in his mouth. The response to that, which seems to have been an acceptable response in their time, was that you can check the moel out before you give him permission to do the mila, either in general check him out or check him out each time, and it's not clear. So once that was gotten rid of as an issue, then claim number two was the point of the mitzitza was to close up the wound, and that's a mistake. And therefore, once we know that it's a mistake, it's also, at least on Shabbos, a violation of Shabbos for no good reason. So Rav Yaakov Ettinger responds, first, they didn't understand what the point of mitzitza was. As we've seen before, as we saw the Dvar Shmuel, they thought the mitzitza was to help by sucking at it, by pulling, you would pull the edges of the wound together and close it up, and that's not what it was. So this is a simple example of that, but I think it's more common than that. I don't have other examples, and it's not our point to give other examples here, but it's more common than we realize for people to assume they know the reason for something and then reject it when, in fact, when they look a little more carefully, they would find other reasons for it. So this is an example of that. Rav Yaakov Avinger says, you misunderstood what the point of mitzitza was according to Chazal, because they didn't think it. They thought the wine, right, as we saw before in the Dvar Shmuel, the wine putting it on was the constricting agent to close up the wound. The mitzitza was, in fact, not for that purpose. Then, as the question of whether Metzitza is an Isser Skila, he says that's also not true. Because even though it's true that the Gemara says we violate Shabbos for Metzitza because it must be a danger thing, that's because, but if there's no value to it, then you're being chovel b'Shabbat. You're causing a wound on Shabbos. So it's true that chovel b'Shabbat is a mekalkel, it's a destructive kind of thing, and that's pater of alasr, meaning that's aser derabanan, right? So it's aser derabanan. So how's that a response? So they said you're violating Shabbos, you can't do it. So you might say, okay, even if it's only also the Rabbanan, but I don't want to violate the Rabbanan for no good reason, right? So the reason that Rav Yaakov Engler says that's important is because in a Rabbanan, then it's a lower level worry. So let's say you're worried about violating the Rabbanan, but on the other hand, you should be also worried that when Chachamim said that there's danger in not doing Mitzitza, then you have to worry about that as well. Meaning when the people say there's no such thing, it's not true that a lack of matzitza creates any kind of danger for the baby. Do they know that for sure? Something that, he says, Rav Yaakov, something that in the time of the Mishnah they already did it. We've been doing it for almost 2,000 years, at least, right? And they're going to say it's completely rigged. It's completely wrong. It's completely erroneous. How do they know that 1 out of 1,000, 1 out of 10,000 don't have danger from this? Now, the truth is, as he's saying this, you could say it the other way as well. What if 1 out of 10,000 get danger the other way? Meaning, what if you check the moel, and you check them all, and yet 1 out of 10,000, or 1 out of, he goes further, 1 out of 1 million, you have a problem. Maybe that should be a reason not to do a matzitza. So this line of his reasoning is an important line of reason to think about, because what is the level of danger that leads us to act a certain way or not a certain way? I think that's always an interesting question in a lot of contexts. I know that I knew of a couple who a doctor was trying to recommend and they think about aborting a baby because 1 out of 6 babies might have a serious birth defect. Not even a serious birth defect. So the interesting question is, 1 out of 6 is more than you'd want it to be, but it still means that 5 out of 6 in that particular situation come out perfectly fine. So is that enough to say, no, I have to this? So what are the worries, what are the levels of worry that we are concerned with and that we're not concerned with in various situations? I think is an important general question that comes up here as well. So here, Yaakov Ellinger is using it to say that even if you think that it might be an issur d'rabbanan, a rabbinic prohibition to do this matzitza on Shabbos because you think that it doesn't really have any value, but Chazal allowed it, and Chazal said it was a danger, so how do you know that it's not a danger in some minority enough cases that doctors haven't noticed it yet? That's always a question in evidence-based medicine as well. Right? Let's say they do a good double-blind study, which many times they don't. But let's say they do a good double-blind study, and they do it with, 1,000 people. And out of the 1,000 people, not a single one of them had a problem with matzitza without matzitza. That's the study. So Rav Yaakov Ellinger would say, well, but maybe it's out of 10,000. So these are always problems and questions of what we consider evidence, we don't consider evidence, and what kinds of danger we do and don't worry about. More than that, he goes on to say, and also, by the way, how do you know that it was Chazal who made the Matzitza? Maybe it came from the Nevi'im, maybe it came from the time of the prophets. So given the time of the prophets, you could say that maybe they have some kind of, not a natural insight into this issue, but they have a supernatural, metaphysical, a divine insight. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu, when he brought down the Torah and he taught us about Mila, he said, this Mila, by the way, that we have as tradition from Avraham, included a Matzitza. Because Rav Yaakov Ellinger says the Mishnah isn't presenting a ruling to do Matzitza. The Mishnah is reflecting something that was well known already, that the way you did Mila was with a Matzitza. Now the response I think that people would have made to Rav Yaakov Ellinger was, well, that's the way they did it, which is folk medicine. And now we know better than folk medicine. And so that kind of claim comes up in lots of areas of halacha. So it's interesting for me to watch it here, because Rav Yaakov Ellinger's response is very much the traditional response. You're too quick to reject what we did in the past. You're too quick to assume they didn't know what they were doing. How do you know that they didn't have insights that we don't have? In his case, he's strengthening by saying it's especially true if the whole idea of Matzitza came from the time of the Nevi'im, so then they might have been making a claim that's not a claim based on physical evidence and knowledge of nature, but a claim that's based on other things. So that's a reason not to throw out, not to get rid of Matzitza Bapeh. Then he expands a little bit. He says, we have it more often than you might remember, that the people who were involved in nature, right, scientists, we would call them today, where they disagree with Chazal, and we don't always believe them to get rid of or to ignore what Chazal have told us. So, for example, he says, there's a Gemara in Yevamos that talks about if they have a woman who goes, whose husband goes away, and he's gone, you know, for a year, and she has a baby. So, what do we do about that, right? The instinct would be that if she went away, if he was really gone for a year, that there's no way that he could be the father of the baby, which means she must have had an adulterous affair, which means the baby must be a mamzer. The baby must be halachically illegitimate and can't marry a regular Jewish woman, or if it's a girl, can't marry a regular Jewish man. But in the Gemara there, what one opinion had it that it was that you could say, no, that maybe the baby would just stayed for a long time in the mother's womb. It was a long gestation, and that's what happens. Rabbi Yaakov says, and I've spoken to doctors today, and it's like a joke. And they said the longest it could ever possibly be would be 10 months. So Rabbi Yaakov is going to use that as an example of, but halakhically we don't follow that. We will halakhically follow what the Gemara said. Then he says, the Chelkat Mechokik and the Beit Shmuel, two important commentators on Eben HaEzer, had already quoted the Tosos who rule like Shmuel. So Shmuel held, did not agree with that Gemara in Yevamot. Shmuel held that the most, which is much more similar to what we hold today, scientifically, he held that a pregnancy had to be somewhere like 271, 273 days, around 9 months. But then he says the people, the scientists of his time didn't agree with that number either. So that was a dispute. And then the Ramah had a case. The Ramah says that she can have a baby after 5 months and 2 days, and it can be a baby that was a fully formed baby. And that also, doctors said, there's no way that that can be, and they laughed at it. So Binyan Zion says, in all these kinds of situations, we follow the tradition of Chazal. Although he notes that the Ramah there has an opinion that says that unless it's clear to us that it's not true, so the baby's born after 5 months and 2 days, but it's clearly a premature baby, we don't then say, oh, it might be full term, because we see that it's a premature baby. So these are complex issues that come up in different situations, and each one I think would have to be handled on its own, of what have we do when scientists claim that a tradition in the Gemara is inaccurate scientifically. Sometimes, for example, the Tosafot would say times have changed. Back then they were one way and we're in a different way. That would allow us to follow the scientific consensus of our times and without rejecting what happened in the Gemara. That's one sort of path one could take on these issues. Rabbi Yaakov Menger is saying we're going to follow Chazal unless we have real good evidence that we have to go against it. Then he goes to Yonasan Eibschitz, who was one of the great achronim, he says, about him. And he was also well known as a sort of a scientist, as a Renaissance man, as somebody who was interested in other forms of wisdom than specifically Torah-related ones. And when he mentioned the Gemara that says that a woman can, that it could happen, that a woman would get pregnant in a bathhouse, meaning in a bathhouse, if however it happens, but a man has an ejaculation in the bathhouse and a woman were to bathe in that same water, Chazal seemed to have thought that the possibility of pregnancy would be real and out there. So when Yosef Anishis comes across that Gemara, or is writing about that Gemara, he says, and don't pay attention to doctors who say that it's completely impossible, because he says they've gotten too caught up in knowing, in their sense of their own intellect, and their idea that if they can't figure out how it would work, it's impossible. And this happens in many times. I've met many scientists, or I've read many scientists' writings where they'll say something like this. Not sometimes there's evidence-based, right? You do a blind study, you have a million women going to a bathtub, and there's stuff in the water, and it never gets pregnant. You can say, we've seen it a million times, it's not what happens, it seems like it doesn't happen. That would be one kind of thing. But in many situations, the scientists in question are just completely sure, based on their understanding so far, what it is, it's just out of the realm of their ability to imagine. And then, of course, sometimes it turns out to be true. So, you know, when quantum physics was first thought of, there were many scientists who said, oh, that's completely impossible. That's what Yonasan Eibschitz was pointing out. That very often, scientists will reject something not because they have a reason to reject it, because it doesn't fit their current picture, and therefore they reject it. And therefore, he says that and then he says, and they can't even cure, he doesn't say the common cold. We today would say, and they can't even cure the common cold. He says they can't even cure, you know, many lesser pains, aches and pains, which in the time of the Gemara clearly were healed all the time, because they talk about how easy it was for them to heal them, and they talk about getting rid of the Sefer Refuot, because people were so confident of their ability to be healed, they weren't turning to Hashem anymore at all. That's Rav Yonasan and Aishas. And therefore, Rav Yaakov Ellinger says, we should do Metzitza B'Peh. We don't have to go away from our tradition just because of these doctors who are, as we said before, Chadashim Mikarov Ba'o. They're coming with new ideas. We don't have to pay attention to those ideas because we listen to the Mishnah. We listen to maybe Moshe Rabbeinu. We listen to the custom of the Jewish people more than 2,000 years, and we should do Metzitz. And then in the closing lines, though, he says, and by pet, and with the mouth. So today, again, maybe you use a hypodermic tube so that you don't have direct contact and you can avoid some of the infection issues. Then he says, but he shouldn't completely ignore the dangers that the doctors come up with. In other words, he's not being anti-science completely. He's saying that scientists sometimes overstep their bounds. The scientists sometimes say that which they don't have the ability or the right to say. But if they bring up a real worry, then we have to worry about it. And even if it's a distant worry, let's say it's 1 out of 10,000 or more than that, where there'll be an infection based on Metzitza B'Peh, you have to worry about it. And therefore, you have to be very careful that before you let somebody do a Metzitza B'Peh, you check his mouth carefully. If there's nothing wrong with him, you check his fever, you check his vitals, whatever it is, and you find as much as you can. So that would be a reason today to, let's say, use that hypodermic thing to create some distance in that. In other words, if Yaakov Ellinger is pointing out to us, in our tshuva a day for the 10th of Elul, the question of what happens when scientists come along and say that something that's in our tradition runs counter to what science says. Rav Yaakov Ellinger is pointing out that Metzitza B'Peh is a long tradition, that we follow our traditions, that even if our traditions are worried about about infrequent things, we might worry about them, but we also care about those things that science point out that have real validity to them, and we'll care for those as well. So Metzitza B'Peh, the creating of suction at the end of the circumcision to pull out the blood, was a custom under attack in 1846 that Rav Yaakov Ellinger defends, and that is our responsibility for the 10th of Elul. Have a great day.